on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our May 21st, 2024 edition of Invest Talk. I am Justin Klein, and the objective for this podcast and radio show and now video over on YouTube is to help you become a better investor. And we do that by not chasing the sexy, exciting names, but focusing on the fundamentals of investing, which is allocating capital to good quality businesses that have durability, that have reasonable valuations, that aren't built on quicksand, right? That have substance behind them. And, you know, in today's social media world, we know there's plenty to go around that does not have substance. So that's what this show is about. It's about the true substance of investing. Tried and true principles of being down to earth and focusing on the facts in the ground, not hyperbole, not hopes and dreams of how the world will be or should be. It's about what the world is, okay, today. So that's what the show is about. We do that by answering your finance and investment questions, as well as giving you data and perspective developed over 20 plus years of investment experience. So our mission is the same each and every weekday on InvestDoc. Now we'll talk about today's market performance as well as run down some show topics, but right after we tackle this first caller question.
Hey, InvestDoc. I recently opened a position in BWXT on its most recent pullback. And in researching that company, I came across another one, Woodward, WWD, and wanted to see what you guys thought about this. And it seems like it's had a run-up recently, so I wanted to know what you guys thought about the fundamentals and what a good entry point price would be. Thanks again.
All right, let's take a look at Woodward, Inc. WWD is the symbol. This is at a 52-week high. It is surging. It's an independent designer, manufacturer, and service provider of control solutions for the aerospace and industrial markets. Okay, so it's an industrial name, and it has production facilities here in the U.S., Europe, Asia as well, and its Woodward is worldwide, about $11 billion market cap. Earnings this year are supposed to be up 42% to $5.98 and then $6.30 next year, and it's a $182 stock. So if you get based on forward-looking earnings, you're paying about 30 times, right? About $6, $6 plus in earnings, you're at $180 plus, okay? So that's a steep price. It's well above average, about 50% higher multiple than the overall market. And you really have to justify that particular valuation, especially when you look at things like enterprise value to EBITDA, trading at about 18 times, which is, sorry, about 19 times, which is on the high end of its longer term range. So its business is good. And the valuations are, I would say it's a bit overvalued, but not dramatically so based on, you know, historical multiples. What I like about it is they have very minimal debt, about $323 million in free cash flow and $11 billion market cap. Talking about a 3% free cash flow yield, not exciting there. Return on equity at about 16.6%, that's nice and solid. Problem is longer term, its average is closer to, say, the low teens, 11, 12, 13%, depending on what time frame you're looking at. So it's a good business. I like it. If you are looking for a bargain, this is not the place for it. As you would imagine, it just recently moved from about 150 in late May to 182 now. So it's overbought. It's a bit overvalued, but I like the name on your watch list. I like the balance sheet. I like the business that it's in, but I need a pullback. If it gets back into the 160 level, that's a more reasonable place to pick it up. But I like that you are identifying some great businesses, and that's always job number one. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is this topic. Credit card delinquencies are increasing for maxed out borrowers. So we're going to touch on how all debt outside of student loans delinquencies have been steadily rising since the fourth quarter of 2021. And that should teach you something, okay, which we'll get into in a little bit. So we're going to discuss credit, U.S. credit card delinquency, U.S. credit card debt, as well as just credit card debt trends in general. I also have some other topics on the docket as well. One is in regards to, you know, we talked about cloud computing lately, and AI and the cloud lately, and the data power demands and how that has impacted the utility market. But what are the tech companies doing about it? How are they trying to get ahead and basically secure rights to power that's out there? In addition, something we want to talk about yesterday, but didn't get to, which was intra-family loans. How are they taxed? How do they work? We're going to dig into that. And then lastly, Europe's economy is starting to grow again. Is it durable? Is it sustainable? We'll dig into that story as well. We also have some voice bank questions. One is in regards to Delaware Statutory Trusts, DSTs. There's two different types of DSTs, and we'll talk about the differences there, as well as WEC Energy Group. We also have some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel, so we'll get to some of those as well. But most importantly, are your live calls. And we welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Now, we're going to head into a short break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a live call. Let's go talk to Jason in Illinois looking at NCALH, which I believe is Norwegian Cruise Line, correct? Yep, Norwegian Cruise Line. The owner looking to buy it.
That's correct. I'm looking to buy it. I've been watching it for quite a while. I know they took on a lot of debt. I know they issued shares. I'm not looking for it to get back to pre-pandemic price levels, but at this price it's at today, I just thought it might be a good time to get in early before it does begin to rebound. What's your thoughts on a buy and hold here?
Well, what makes you interested in this name? Let's start with that. What is it about Norwegian Cruise Lines, the third largest cruise line company in the world? What makes it exciting for you?
Looking at the pre-pandemic levels, the price point they reached, I know they doubled in shares, issuing new shares. Just thinking they're about a quarter of what they were pre-pandemic. Businesses seems like it's good. They've been beating earnings for the last year. They're cash flow positive now. I just feel like they have a clear path to paying down their debt and becoming profitable again. It just seems like a pretty sound business right now.
Well, their business is improving. I will say that. And you're right. They doubled the number of shares outstanding. So getting back to it's $5 per share in earnings pre-pandemic, probably not going to happen. Could they get to 250? But that would be basically break even, same business that they had before. And yes, that's certainly possible. But the problem is that they're, as you said, their debt levels increased dramatically over that time. Pre-pandemic, they had about $6.4 billion in long-term debt. Now they have nearly $14 billion. Now they've started to pay that down a little bit, but still, it's pretty elevated. And that's my issue, is that there's just going to be too much of their cash flow and earnings flowing to the bondholder and not you, the shareholder. That's why they don't pay a dividend, and they probably won't for some time. And then you look at the chart, it's just chopping sideways. And so could it continue to improve a little bit? Sure. But most of those profits are going to go to the bondholders and pare down their balance sheet, at least for the foreseeable future. So, you know, a name to keep on your watch list, but I would need the technicals to improve much more. I would need that debt level to come down dramatically from here, closer to its pre-pandemic level. And then I could say, okay, now you can unlock some cash flow and earnings that will flow to you, the shareholder, either through buying back shares, dividends, etc. But until then, I just think there's much better places to allocate your capital. Remember, there's opportunity cost to every dollar that you put into an investment. Meaning the cost is I could take that dollar and invest it somewhere else. And I want to invest in companies that have very strong balance sheets that aren't dealing with the extra costs of higher interest rates going forward. And so it's fine. It's improving, but it's very low on the list of attractive opportunities in today's market. Thanks for the call. Let's go to John in Milpitas looking at Costco.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I would try to get in to the Costco. Is that a good time to get in or wait for pullback? Thank you.
Well, you probably should wait for a pullback. You know, just move from 700 all the way to 800 in the span of less than a month. So it's definitely a bit overbought. And if you go all the way back to earlier last year, it was trading at 450. Now, we do own this for clients, so we like the company, but it technically it's a bit overbought, and you know it is trading at a pretty hefty multiple. Great business, but you know you want to be a little bit judicious on when you actually allocate more capital to it. And after this run, you know you're likely to get some more market volatility in the third quarter, and that could be a time that you get into Costco. But after this run from 700 to 800, I probably wouldn't be, you know, when you say timing wise, not the best time to be investing in Costco. Thanks for the call. Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a very boring market. Why? Because tomorrow we have NVIDIA earnings and everyone is focused on that. And that's certainly a potential market moving event. You had small caps across the board. They were down nearly 0.25%, definitely the weakest part of the market today. Large caps were up about 0.2% or so. You had some decent movers. Tesla was up 6%. I'm not sure what the news was on that. Peloton was down 16%. AMC down 3%. Let me see. GameStop down 4%. So that whole meme craze looks to be losing its momentum. That's for sure. Well, I guess it already has, right? GameStop. Look at this. I haven't looked at this chart since this all happened. Talk about a flash in the pan here. It went from $10 all the way, $10 on, when was that? The first of this month. Okay. And it peaked out at around $65 on the 14th. And now it's back down to 21. Obviously, Wall Street Bets and them are trying to juice this back up again. Certainly that could happen, but you can see how quickly these things fail, especially in an environment where the cost of capital is something. If you have your money in something like this and it's not working, it's easy to pull that out and start to earn some interest on it. So I think the average investor has a little bit looser hands than they have before, and their hands are always loose when it comes to what, you know, their ability to hold the companies that they purchase, you know, just historically. They're not strong hands like a big institutional fund. So, you know, tomorrow will be a market moving event. Like I said, NVIDIA is supposed to move 8, 9, 10% on earnings, something like that. And it's some high, lofty expectations built in, and we'll see if they can beat them. Now, as we go to a break, I'll remind you that the KAPP Financial InvestTalk Wealth Webinar is hosted by myself and Luke. And the official webinar title is Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. And it's happening online Tuesday, June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Just head over to investtalk.com and register for our upcoming wealth webinar. But now, my phone lines are open and waiting for your calls at 888-99-CHART.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Now, our main focus point is about credit card delinquencies. And there was a recent report about a week ago, and this is from the New York Fed, okay? And it showed that household debt balances grew by $184 billion over the previous quarter. Now, housing debt balances grew $206 billion, okay? While balances on other non-housing debt fell. In fact, credit card balances fell $14 billion. You won't hear that in the fear-mongering space. There's so much fear-mongering out there on YouTube. I see all these YouTube channels talking about how the housing market's going to crash. They are complete jokes. It's crazy. They're just clowns because they're not looking at the data. You know, and they'll talk about, oh, credit card balances hit $1 trillion. But you know, that's not in relation to overall net wealth and income, et cetera. It's just a big round number. The reality is credit card balances fell in the first quarter. Now, that is typical, okay, because most people rack up debt during the holiday season, credit card debt, and then they try to pay that down through the first quarter when they're not spending as much, okay? Now, an increasing number of borrowers are behind on credit card payments, however, okay? So that's another thing that these fearmonger, bear porn people will spew, which is, oh, credit card delinquencies are up 38%, or, you know, they'll cite some big number, 112% year over year. But what they're not looking at is that they're not telling you is that those are from very, very low levels. And we know that because during the pandemic, most people paid down their credit card balances dramatically because they couldn't go spend money. They were getting checks in the mail. They were still mainly having jobs, and they were using that money to pay down their credit cards. And so that's why balances were pretty low and they've been rising, and same with delinquencies. Now, one thing to watch to look at, okay, how much further will credit card delinquencies go in the short to medium term? And that is credit card utilization, right? Aggregate utilization. Now, was it about 23% last quarter? About flat, quarter over quarter. Okay, 52% of borrowers were using less than 20% of their available credit in the first quarter, 52%. Only 18% were using at least 90% of their available credit or more. And we know, you know, if you're starting to max out your credit cards, you're probably going to go delinquent pretty soon. And so there's a strong correlation between utilization and delinquencies, as you would imagine. About a third of balances associated with maxed out borrowers have gone delinquent in the last year. Okay, about a third. Now, current borrowers in that 90 to 100% utilization range, they only have about $5,000 in total credit limit, which is highly correlated with their credit score. So those that are in the 0 to 20%, they typically have limits of $21,000 or more. Okay. And it's highly correlated based on age as well as income quartile, as you, once again, would imagine. If you're in the lowest quartile, about 12.3% of those are maxed out on their credit cards. So 90%+. If you're in the second quartile, 10.2%. Third quartile, 8.1%. And in the highest quartile, only 5.5% with a median credit limit of $25,800. Now, it's also broken down by generation. So as you imagine, the younger you are, the less income you have, the higher delinquency and more maxed out you are in your credit cards. Gen Z, at median credit limit, $4,500, 15.3% of those are maxed out. Whereas boomers, median credit limit, $22,000, 4.8% are maxed out there. 9.6% for Gen X and millennials, about 12.1% of millennials are maxed out on their credit cards. Now, Gen Z's first credit card account is on average 4 years old, while millennials 11 years old. And this is, once again, it's been rising, but we are not back to pre-pandemic levels when it comes to those that are maxed out. On average, pre-pandemic, about 17% of borrowers were maxed out. Today, we're at about 16. So we're not quite there yet. Okay. And, you know, this is something that I wanted to highlight because it's talked about a lot. But most data that you're seeing out there, if you see a headline that says data that or a YouTube video or something that says, oh, this is up this much, you always have to ask yourself, what are the other numbers? Understand that number in context. Especially percentages. Percentages can be maneuvered very easily because you can just cherry pick the base effect, meaning what are you measuring that number against? 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago? And you can find the one that gives the better, bigger headline. But what us professionals do, we look at all the data and we make sure we understand the picture clearly. And while, yes, delinquencies are on the rise, they're just back to pre-pandemic levels. Not anything that tells you we're going into a major recession or anything like that. Okay? Now, next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. Investors are still their own worst enemies. A comprehensive financial plan is only as good as investors' ability to stick it through thick and thin. So we'll discuss that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
How you doing, guys? This is Brett from New Jersey. Thanks for all that you do. I'm interested in two energy companies. They are electric companies. And I think with all of the AI, electricity is going to be in greater demand. The two companies are WEC Energy, W-E-C, and Entergy, or ETR. Can you do a breakdown of these companies and tell me which one would be a better buy and maybe an entry point? I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right. One is WEC Energy. WEC is the symbol. And they provide utility services to 1.2 million electric and 3 million gas customers in Wisconsin and Michigan. And then the other is Entergy, and ETR is a symbol. They're engaged in electric power production and retail distribution to 3 million utility customers in Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. And this is pretty simple. If you're going for an AI play, most of the AI facilities are being set up in the South and Southeast. And so WEC is in the North, Northeast. Or just say the North, you know, Michigan and Wisconsin. And Entergy is located in the Smile regions, which would be Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, that Southeast part of the country. And so that's why its relative strength is much better. And that's the one I would go with if you were trying to buy a utility company. You said energy company, and I think you I think for the average layperson, it seems okay. They transfer energy, they sell electricity. That's energy. That's an energy company. In Wall Street speak, energy companies are typically oil and gas companies. Okay, maybe coal, right? Thermal coal. But mainly, when you're talking about these type of companies, these are utility companies. They're electric utility companies. So that's the way you want to classify them. And ETR would be the better way to go if you were trying to play AI. Now, you probably noticed that we're answering questions submitted via our YouTube channel. And this one came in a couple nights ago. Jose Cruz says, I want to include IOO in my retirement account, 6 to 8 years till retirement. Your advice on this. Thank you. IOO is the symbol, and this is an ETF. Okay, this is the iShares Global 100 ETF. Okay, and it's would give you broad diversification in foreign markets. It's large cap blend, 41 basis point expense ratio for foreign market exposure. It's not terrible. I wouldn't say that's cheap, but it's not terrible. Not too bad. Okay, 1.4% dividend yields. Okay, not bad. Let's take a look at the holdings here. I'm not sure what, I'm assuming this is following some index, and it looks like it is all, actually not all foreign stocks. So I would think, oh yeah, it's global. So anything global is typically going to U.S. and foreign markets. So this is about 22% non-U.S. stocks, and then about 88% U.S. equities, okay? You have a 40% of this in technology, 40. Woo, that is high. Consumer cyclicals, 10%. Healthcare, about 11%. You know, it's okay, but look at the top 10 holdings. Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA, Amazon, Alphabet, Eli Lilly, Broadcom, JP Morgan, and Exxon. Seven of those 10 are in tech. The majority of those are fairly valued or probably overvalued. You have JP Morgan that just said that they are not going to be buying shares back at the current prices. So that was down big with yesterday, the day before. Of the top 10, Exxon is probably the best, but is 10th on the list here, at least from a valuation perspective. And then Eli Lilly, it's I think they're part of the GLP-1 craze. So I don't think this is horrendous, but it's not good just because it's too concentrated in those tech names. I don't like the diversity of the from a sector perspective. And you're not getting, if you want global, I'd want a little bit more non-US equity exposure. So I'm passing on this one. I think you have better ways to get exposure to foreign markets. Thanks for the call. Now let's answer two in a row. Jim Lay says, what are your thoughts on CSL? CSL for long-term investment. This is Carlyle Companies, not Carlyle Group, Carlyle Companies. And this is in the industrial space. Okay, diversified operations. Let me dig into this a little bit more. Let's see how big it is. $20 billion market cap. So, you know, I would call that mid cap. It manufactures and sells single-ply roofing products and warranted systems associated with commercial building industry. Interesting. Okay. Earnings are scheduled to be at an all-time high, $22.53 next year. If this earnings trajectory keeps up, I have no problem with it. The relative strength is very good. It's obviously very overbought. It's gone from 230 back in October all the way to $426 per share. Analyst estimates continue to go up. I would really want to know why it's doing so well. I wouldn't imagine that their business is booming quite this well, especially when you see the struggles in the office sector. I think there's going to be a slowdown in commercial construction, and that would worry me. So I think it's gone a little too far, too fast, but I really need to be confident. If I'm confident that these earnings of $20+ per share this year and next year are sustainable and not just a flash in the pan, not something that is going to add back to $8 per share that it earned pre-pandemic, then I would be fine with it. But I need to do a deeper dive here. It doesn't feel that this is sustainable, but maybe it is if you do a deeper dive. But a good name to be on the watch list and do a little deeper research on. That was Carlyle Group. CSL is the symbol. Now let's talk a little bit about AI and energy. We talked yesterday, I believe it was, about the utility companies that are doing very, very well. We just had that caller asking about the utility companies and saying, okay, that is a play on AI. And that's certainly one way to play it. But what's interesting is that the tech companies are also getting in on the game. They're not just relying on the utility companies to supply them with a requisite level of power going forward, especially when you look at the IEA, the International Energy Agency. They predict that data centers will eat up more than 800 terawatts globally in 2026, double the amount it did in 2022, double. And data processing could triple its share of the American power consumption by 2030 to 7.5% from 2.5% today. And utility companies, they're expanding their grid, but you know they have cost-minded regulators. And so it's not as easy to just simply add on additional wattage. Okay. So big tech, they have deep pockets, and they are putting money up to invest in different energy products. On May 1st, Microsoft and Brookfield announced a deal to build 10.5 gigawatts of renewable capacity in America and in Europe by 2030. And their goal is to meet the pledge that by 2030, 100% of its electricity, 100% of the time, will come from zero carbon sources. So they need help with that. They don't have inherent expertise, and so they're partnering with companies like Brookfield. In addition, Alphabet is co-created a company called Sidewalk Infrastructure Partners. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to make data processing more flexible, more efficient, doing things like shifting less time-sensitive tasks such as training AI models to periods of low demand. Okay, so it's about efficiency as well, not just saying, okay, we have these systems, but how do we make these systems more efficient? AWS, Amazon, paid in March $650 million for a 960 megawatt data center in Pennsylvania, and that's powered by nuclear reactors next door. Microsoft struck a deal with Constellation Energy, America's biggest nuclear operator, for supply of nuclear power for its data centers in Virginia. And they both are looking at small modular reactors that could power these data centers locally, meaning they have these big data centers. They put a small modular reactor right next to it, not even relying on the grid. And I could see that as, and I think that is probably an underappreciated play, because if any company can perfect basically taking a normal nuclear reactor and putting it on a manufacturing line where you can pump a bunch of these out. They're smaller. They don't use as much power, but they still are powered by nuclear fuel. And you can just put them strategically around the country. Now, Google is looking at geothermal energy. They're investing in a company called Fervo. And what they're doing is they're using shale industry type technology to tap into geothermal deposits, trying to bring that and heat energy up from the Earth's center. Another interesting team up, which is Google and Microsoft teaming up with Nucor. If you know Nucor, they're a huge, probably one of the best run steel mill companies in the world. And steel takes a lot of energy. And so they're going into a joint partnership. And the last one is OpenAI. Sam Altman is investing in Helion. It's a nuclear fusion startup, as well as ExoWatt, which develops solar modulars that can both generate electricity and store heat as well. And he's also investing in Oklo, which is a micro nuclear reactor. So what you're seeing here is that all of these tech companies see the issue straight in front of them. And so this is a play that I think is just getting started. And I think there are going to be some companies that really capitalize on this and are really going to boom based on this. And I think this is a better way to play AI, because in general, this is a business model that works, right? We know that power generation, you can sell for a profit. It's not known whether AI is actually going to turn into a true and tried business model, or will be commoditized and just be a feature set of kind of every piece of software that you use. We're not sure yet. And so till we know, definitely playing the energy space is a better risk versus reward. Let's just say that. Now, 2024 is moving along at a fast pace, more than halfway through the month of May. So the second quarter will be ending pretty soon. That means we'll be halfway through the year. And you know, it's been a good year for equities. Why is that? Do you understand the dynamics? I've been saying this for a while. Equities are the best hedge against inflation. We are in a market where, or we're in an economy where inflation is the name of the game. The powers that be, they need inflation. They cannot have an 08 with a level of debt that we have in our system. And if you are caught being too quote-unquote conservative, you're going to feel left out. Because remember, earnings are priced nominally. They're not adjusted for inflation. And that's why you had X Energy earnings up 10% in the first quarter. Why? Because the economy grew 2 or 3%. Nominal GDP growth was in the high single digits. And there's typically a high correlation between nominal GDP growth and earnings. When earnings go up, typically prices of stocks go up. So are you prepared for this? Are you still stuck in the mindset of, oh, wait, oh, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket. We're going to have this big deflationary impulse and you're going to have defaults galore. I'm sorry. But if you pay attention to the realities on the ground, not the PTSD of 08, the reality of the situation, the fact that no country has ever defaulted on their debt nominally when they control their currency. What have they done? They defaulted over time through inflation. And that's the environment that we're in. And we're probably in for the next couple, three decades. Tell these things play out. This is a new regime. Is your portfolio adjusted for this new regime? Or are you still hiding out in treasury bonds? In quote unquote dividend payers that aren't benefiting from the inflationary environment, that are stuck with debt loads that are too burdensome because you don't have a plan. You're not adjusting to this market environment. Well, if you need help, I encourage you to reach out to myself at my company, KPP Financial, where we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So we are developing these strategies, not just for our clients, but for ourselves as well, because we see what is happening in the economy, in different industries. Higher prices are the name of the game, which means higher profits are also in store. Why do you think the market's up, you know, low teens this year? It was up 20% plus last year, et cetera. Do you need help? Take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone or go-to meeting. Just head over to investtalk.com. Click on the portfolio review button in the top right-hand part of the screen. Now we're moving into a break. We have one caller on hold, so hang on. We'll get to you right after this break at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, if you're serious about improving your investing skills, I have some good news for you. My company, KPP Financial, is presenting the new InvestTalk Wealth webinar titled Quality Investing Digging Deeper Than Dividends. Here's just a few of topics that we will cover on June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to talk about the importance of fundamentals like profitability and balance sheet strength and how high dividend payers compare to their peers and certain qualitative factors to help avoid value traps and develop the ability to identify genuine opportunities. It's free, but you must sign up for the InvestTalk Wealth webinar to gain valuable investing insights. Just head over to investtalk.com to register for our upcoming wealth webinar. Once again, quality investing, digging deeper than dividends. Let's go to Nick and Hayward looking at MDT Medtronics.
Yes, sir. Hi, Justin. Thanks for your wonderful show. Enjoy it.
Appreciate it.
I heard somebody's recommending Medtronic, and I wanted to take what do you think about it as a entry point here at $85.17 or something like that? What do you think?
Well, you caught us. This is actually a name that is near the top of our list to be purchasing for clients in the near future. So we're looking at some other names as well. Obviously, you have to be selective in our portfolios, but this is near the top of the list. So I go for it. I mean, it's come down dramatically and it's starting to gain some technical strength, which we like, and its earnings are set to rebound. So And if you look at the secular tailwinds, and for everyone else out there, what Medtronic does is they make pacemakers, defibrillators, heart valves, stents, insulin pumps, etc. Uh-huh. And we know that boomers are retiring and getting older, and they're a large cohort, and they're going to need a lot of these products. So, you know, there's definitely some secular tailwinds there as well. And, you know, if you look at its free cash flow, about $5 billion, that's about $113 billion market cap. So about a 5% free cash flow yield, which is solid, not amazing, but certainly has a dividend. I don't think the dividend is going to go up dramatically from here. The payout ratio is 87%, but I think it can afford that. The balance sheet is solid. So I think the 3.25% dividend is pretty solid there. So yeah, we like a lot about it. Like I said, we haven't pulled the trigger quite yet, but it's all kind of lining up pretty good. So Medtronic is a name that, you know, if you're looking to add healthcare exposure, this would be one of the best in the industry right now.
You think I should buy a little bit here and maybe wait and buy more later on?
Well, I mean, it depends how cute you want to get. You know, the fundamentals and the technicals are improving. And, you know, when something is down from its well off its high, $135 per share was its high, went all the way down to 70, and now we're at 85. I think there's definitely room to the upside. I frankly wouldn't get cute with it. I would just buy it. Thanks for the call. Now, there's something interesting that's happening across the globe, and that is Europe. Europe is actually doing pretty good. EU GDP has risen by about 3% since 2009. Now, that's compared to 9% in America. But the latest data published in May showed that European EU growth grew by 0.3% in the first quarter. That doesn't sound amazing, but they were in, you know, depending on what country you're talking about, they were in a recession for a lot of 2022 and 2023. So things are improving. And one of the reasons they were in recession is because, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of the debt outstanding, especially mortgage debt in Europe, is not fixed like it is here. It's typically floating. And a lot of times it's only floating and it resets every 2 years. Sometimes over five, every five, but a lot of debt resets every 2 years. And so they've felt the higher interest rates a lot more than we have here in America. And so if there is an easing cycle, which it looks like there will be, and this is one of the reasons why I think the Fed is more apt to cut rates going forward, is because that's what the ECB needs to do. They need to cut rates to kind of spur their economy, because their economy is more interest rate sensitive. And so they don't, the Fed wants to kind of go along with what the ECB is doing. So I think that Europe will benefit a lot more from the next easing cycle. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And check out us in video form over on our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with 2 T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.